Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anazal Ministries podcast.
Hello, friends. Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. Welcome, geekologists. We have a juicy, juicy show for you today. Whether you're listening in your earbuds, listening to the podcast in your car, or whether you're tuning into us on YouTube, welcome. We're glad you're part of our geeking out today. It's also Holy Week. Hopefully you're getting this on Mandate Thursday, the day when Jesus said, a command I leave you, love one another as I have loved you, and wash some feet. And then tomorrow's Good Friday. Then we have the Easter Vigil, and then we have Easter Sunday. So we're coming to you Holy Week, and this is our Easter special, Holy Week special. And man, I love What If episodes. Today is a What If episode. Today's episode is, what if God sent God's only son to Krypton? That's right. We're talking Supes. We're talking Kal-El. We're talking Krypton. We're talking incarnational theology, faith and science. All these things are wrapped up in this particular episode. And I love doing a what if because, man, that's just a big part of my fandom and what I like to do with theology and philosophy. And I can't do this alone. I'm going to bring on a friend. One of my favorite people to geek out with is Brandon Knight. Brandon, welcome back to Systematic Geekology.
Well, thank you for having me back. And I do have to say, I love it how you, the big Marvel fan, and me, the big Batman fan, is here to talk about Superman. This is going to go great.
It will. Yes, I agree. Yeah, Superman is like the OG. He's the original superhero. He kind of kicked off. I mean, there were heroes before him. There was John Carter of Mars, who was kind of a Superman, John the Baptist preparing the way for Superman with his superpowers on Mars and leaping tall buildings and defying gravity and doing that stuff. So they're definitely superheroes, pulp, sci-fi, and then here comes the caped superhero era with Superman. And so mad respect to Action Comics number one and Superman. We've talked about it in other episodes. I do like Superman. I think it's hard to write Superman these days, but a good Superman comic, good Superman movie. I love him in the cartoons, Super Friends. Like I love a good Superman story. The Superman animated series was fantastic. Like I love it. So this what if, when it comes to what if God sent God's only son to Krypton, has a lot wrapped up in it. And this could be a four hour systematic theology episode, breaking down who is Jesus of Nazareth historically, Christology, incarnational theology, life on other planets, aliens, how God relates to people other than human. Oh man, there's so much here, Brandon. How are we going to contain this in an hour?
I don't know. And there's going to be heresy going around, because how can we talk about something like this without fudging the lines a little bit? It's going to be Yeah, it's going to, I don't know how we're going to do this in an hour, but you have crazy dogs at home who need to be taken care of. And I have a sleeping baby who will wake up at any moment. So we're going to try our best.
Producer Cooper. There's Producer Cooper. Oh, yeah. And then like Trip, if you're listening to this, I got your dogs. I got to let outside so they don't yell at me super loud when I get home. Well, they're going to yell at me, but that's okay. It means they're happy. Whenever we're doing a what if, whenever we're doing speculative philosophy or theology or what if things. There's a danger. There's a danger of a heresy, or you could say something wrong. We're going to kind of let those go a little bit. We're going to hold the word heresy loosely in our hands because we're what ifing. And what ifing is one of my favorite, like, things to do in comics and geekdom. You know, what if Luke turned to the dark side? What if Anakin didn't turn to the dark side? What if the X-Men were beloved superheroes as Captain America and the Avengers? You know, what if Superman's parents, what if like it was swapped where Batman's parents lived and Superman parents died? There's a what
You know, one of the greatest what if stories of all time revolves around Superman, Mark Millar's Red Sun, where Superman crashes not in Kansas, Smallville, Kansas, but the middle of the Soviet Union and becomes the hero of the USSR. So, you know, there's a precedent for talking about what if when it comes to Superman. And, you know, what we're doing here today, all jokes aside, you said, you know, we're holding the term heresy loosely. And I agree because, you know, what we're doing here today is like the heart of liberal theology. You know, there's this whole viewpoint out there that like liberal theologians are just a bunch of bad, woke people. But at the heart of liberal theology is this mentality of what if, insert doctrinal statement here, what if this instead of that, and exploring it that way. And we're here to have fun. You know, no one's going to hell over this one. So maybe the Batman swap, but the idea of Superman or Jesus coming to Krypton. I think there's a lot of different angles we could come at this.
Yeah. You're right. And there was a thought there. Yeah. The what if, like, what if Superman, what a good recommendation. Please read that. If you haven't read Superman Red Sun by Mark Millar, it's so good. And it's a great what if of what happened to Superman. But then we also do it with Jesus too. Like, what if Jesus was born not in Nazareth in like 3 AD or 3 BC or whenever they date it. But what if Jesus was born in 2020? You know, and all the stuff that was going on, or so then you start to think about, and what that helps you with is work out some problems of thinking through some big questions in a different way. You know, as you would go work out, you know, you don't want to work the same muscles all the time. You want to have a well-balanced workout, work different. Don't skip leg day, people. And so what if is leg day? What if episodes are leg day? And people voted for this. So if you're engaging with us on social media, go and follow us. And if you have a good what if idea, we do these, whether it's around Harry Potter or Star Wars or comics and things like this. Then we get your advice so that we'll hop into this episode and talk about these things. So let us know how we did and if there's an what if episode you want to do. That's what if. All right, so I think we have to start a little bit where we're diving into this episode. Here we go, Brandon. What do you know about Krypton? What is some of Krypton's history? I mean, Superman's origin story is one of the most well-known. Mm-hmm. Done over and over again, origin stories. All right. So you have Krypton, who's on the planet, is about to be destroyed, explode the inner core. You have Kal-El's dad, Jor-El, the scientist, warning the science council and the people of the planet that their planet is dying, and they don't listen to him because they think it's false news. And so he sends his baby off in a rocket to Earth. Man, you know, a planet dying and people trying to cover that information or not believing. Yeah, it relates, you know, a little bit. So we know, what else do you know about Krypton and its sun S-U-N, not S-O-N, that we'll talk about that later, but S-U-N and all that kind of stuff. What are some knowledge there you got?
Well, what's interesting about Superman is that, like all origin stories, it usually centers around that one part where Superman is, baby Superman's placed in the rocket and shot off to Earth. Oftentimes we even skip the part about like Crypto, the superdog, or Kara, is that her name? Supergirl, yeah. Who is also sent off, was supposed to be the John the Baptist, in a sense, of meeting Superman there on Earth and raising Kal-El, but shenanigans ensue, and she lands much later on when Kal-El is much older. But it what you see, depending on, you know, my biggest exposure with Superman is the movies. So in like one version, you go back to the Christopher Reeve's version from the 70s and 80s, you know, Krypton, it's that typical view that people had of like advanced civilizations where everything is bright and shiny and everyone's wearing the same matching outfits. At some point, if you're in a utopian society that's like perfect and technologically advanced, everyone stops wearing unique clothing and we all just wear the same red jumpsuit apparatus, I guess. I don't know. But
silver shiny stuff. Yeah.
Silver Marlon shiny Brando stuff. Style.
Marlon Brando stuff. Yeah.
Right. As opposed to, you look at the Henry Cavill, Zack Snyder Man of Steel movie, Krypton is kind of like this, like, it's still an advanced civilization, but it's very like, I don't know if rural is the right word as well, but like, what is it? Russell Crowe is playing Jor-El in that one. And everyone's not wearing the same matching outfits. It's like, yeah, I don't know how far back we actually do have of Superman's home planet of Krypton, because a lot of times what I've seen is the very ending. When it gets destroyed, depending on which version you go with, it looks like Zod may be a part of the big cover up of what's actually going on in Krypton. I think Brainiac plays a role in this as well. But yeah, it's a very advanced civilization in either version.
Right. And I think what we do also know and learn is that part of where Superman gets his powers is the yellow sun from Earth, right? So it's a different, while they're humanoid and everything about him looks like a normal human being, but the genetic makeup of like Earth and his relationship to Earth and then our sun is what gives him his powers. But on Krypton, it's an older planet, more advanced scientifically, technologically advanced society, and it has a giant red sun. So that's part it. And then that tension there between Jor-El and the science council and the leaders and the government and all that stuff is there about this planet's dying. What are we going to do? And the last son of Krypton comes to Earth. Krypton's only begotten son comes to Earth.
And when you get to Superman on Earth and growing up, Clark Kent stuff, like you said, the yellow sun is a big factor in this story, including like there's these stories where Superman's drained or needs to get supercharged and he flies into the yellow sun to get like super powered up. And then there's unique weaknesses within that are all pseudoscience, but it makes sense if you stop thinking about it. So you have like lead is a big like thing that keeps Superman's abilities from working because it usually blocks out the sun. Green kryptonite, which is an actual element on the periodic table, it's an actual thing that exists in the world, drains Superman of his abilities. And at some point in time, I don't know who is responsible for this, I was introduced to it through Jeff Johns, started introducing other colors of kryptonite that do different things to Kryptonians, whether it's red and it makes them super angry and aggressive. I think there's like an orange one as well that does something to the different colors, whatever the reaction is, all messes with the biochemistry of a Kryptonian.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to talk about in a little bit where we think Jesus's kryptonite is, but we'll talk about that in a minute. That's a good question. Yeah, and then a part of Krypton itself, like it does, there are people who played around with its history and its people and society and whether it's utopian or not. And no matter how scientifically advanced it is, they do have a religion, you know, based off their son, Rao, R-A-O. I don't know if I'm saying it right or not, but they have a god. Great Rao is what sometimes Clark will, or Superman will scream, even on Earth. And so there is a religious element to their civilization, and they have different aliens and animals and different things. There's other societies and neighborhoods that Brainiac stole and, you know, put it in a jar, you know, so there's
Pandora.
Yeah. That's
I love that stuff.
It's so good. It's that goofy kind of comic books from the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And that's where you get the different color kryptonite and elements and you bring in other people. Maybe Superman isn't the last person who's alive from Krypton. There's other people too, and dogs and things. We got to give them a sidekick and a good thing. But there's a whole long history of the Krypton. And so, there's that. So when we start thinking about, you know, God's interaction, G-O-D, Yahweh, interaction with other planets, other civilizations, what was going, the speculative, are there aliens and how does God relate to those aliens? Do they need Jesus from Earth, or is God became incarnate there on that planet for them? Or kind of the theology of revelation, does God reveal God's self to that planet by other means by which, and Earth just needed Jesus and that's it? But there's the second person of the Trinity, which is the Son that became incarnate here on Earth. We'll talk about, again, a little bit more. Those are some big questions running around, but I wanted to steer, as we talk about Krypton's history there, before we get to that, now let's talk about like Kal-El and then Clark and Jesus, the difference between the two or similarities, right? So what I'd like to think about is like Kal-El was a part of high society. His dad was a ruler and was top-notch scientist and all that stuff. He had high status. But when he came to Earth, he became Clark. He became born in Smallville. He was born of humble parents, Mom, Pa, Kent, who raised him on a farm to gave him good values. And he's the Boy Scout. And it was that, yes, his nature of who he is from Krypton and the powers and the strength that he has, but also his nurture and how to be a good son to Mom, Pa, Kent, and a good high school friend, and his love of humanity and what makes a hero kind of thing. So you have that aspect. And then you think about Jesus, who, yeah, God became incarnate. We came off Christmas. Now we're heading into Holy Week. We see what kind of Messiah this is. He's not Superman who's going to sit on a throne and flex and take apart people with you know, like laser beams from his eyes. No, he dies on the cross. He humbles himself. He was born in Nazareth, where even one of the disciples said, like, what good can come of Nazareth? Or might as well say Smallville. Dude, the Messiah's from Smallville? What are you talking about?
Right.
And then Jesus, the way Jesus postured himself in the world of not, again, that verse from Philippians, humbled himself. He had power not to be exploited, but humbled himself. And so there's similarities there with these characteristics. But how Jesus fulfills what it means to be Messiah is a little different than Superman saving a train or stopping a volcano from erupting. There's different things there. That's just a little bit there. We could spend a whole episode on this, but what sparks some imagination or what if or reflection there for you, Brandon?
Well, I mean, even right there within Kal-El's name, El, which is the Hebrew term, one of the Hebrew terms for God. It's a generic term for God. Yeah. So even like right up front there. And, you know, you can draw, this is where you get into C.S. Lewis, who, when he was struggling with the faith claims of Christianity and Jesus, and how there's a lot of Messiah stories throughout history, throughout various religions. You're describing Superman, you're describing Jesus, you're describing Hercules. Like, a lot of Heracles' story also kind of overlaps with this as well. There's a lot of Messiah stories. And J.R.R. Tolkien responded to this by saying, paraphrasing here, what if Jesus is the true mythology? What if he's the true Messiah figure? And so this is just kind of a cool reflection of like, yeah, maybe there's not a one-to-one comparison between Clark Kent and Jesus of Nazareth, but that it doesn't have to be in order to be a Messiah character. And it does continue this idea of like, within us, we have this desire to tell these kind of stories. We have this desire to tell stories of people who leave greatness to, you know, tabernacle to become like the people that they are surrounded by, to save, liberate, redeem, whatever the term you would like there to be, those people from captivity, from enslavement, from the evil of big corporation like Lex Luthor. Like we, I just wanted to point that out with the name. You know, there's this long time like running joke that Superman is white Jesus. And, you know, I think certain people to the right might say, no, Jesus totally would have laser visioned the Pharisees if he would have wanted to. But yeah, we'll leave those people over there. But I do think there's one other similarity, and I'll toss it back to you, is that one burden that Superman carries is, you know, he has this super hearing ability. And if you go far enough back, there's at one point in time where Superman basically has all of the abilities. Whatever Siegel needed him to do in the story, he has that ability. But one that has carried throughout is his super hearing. And so he can basically hear all of the time everybody who's in distress within a very large, you know, space. And I have wondered before, like, what was that like for Jesus to know that his ministry was so small? He only covered a very small space within Galilee, Israel. And just to know, like, the entire globe is there. But he is called to follow the Father's will in this very specific time, in this very specific place. Like, I sometimes wonder, like, was there a burden on Jesus? Obviously, God's heart is for the whole nations. That's the birth of the church, right? Like, do you think Jesus ever was like, but I want to go here? You know, like, but what about these people over here? Just a thought.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about incarnational. We can hop there a little bit now. Incarnational theology of that we have this particular, like the Son of God, the second person Trinity is eternal, right? But yet Jesus of Nazareth is a particular person in history who is fully human. So yeah, he's not half human, half God. Did Jesus wrestle with his identity? What did he know? What did he not know? His human side, his God side. Like that's again, that speculation, what if, what do we know, what do we don't, but that what we believe, 100% God, 100% man, but he's also a particular person in a particular time in history in Nazareth, in Galilee, who did ministry and was small, who went small, you know, and started small, and then it grew from there. So yeah, I think that is a very, very good point. And another thing with like Clark or the creation of Superman is that he is definitely written often as a Christ figure, of course. And even in what was it, which movie was it where they remade the Superman movie, and it's the one before Man of Steel where he literally reached out his arms like a cruciform form and floating in space. I mean, he's like, okay, how on the nose? But these two Jewish men, two Jewish teenagers that created Superman, were Jews. And so they were also thinking of their identity as Jews. And I also think of Superman as like a Moses figure, maybe put in a basket and sent off to safety and then called to liberate people from empire and from evil and from villains. And so I often think of him more as a Moses figure rather than a Christ figure. Superman died in the comics, spoiler, from the 90s, but he came back, he rose again, but he's not sacrificing his body or life for others as Christ did on the cross. He's more of that baby in the baby basket sent down the spaceways of the Nile to safety to liberate people from their doom. And that's kind of the mindset that I like to think of him as. And Jesus was Jewish too. So I, you know, there you go. They share the same liberation theology of the Passover, the God of liberation. So I think that's important to think about now too.
If you'd like to support our show, please consider joining our Patreon, where you get live access to our YouTube exclusive, including our comic book ketchup, manga mustard, drinks with Tejas, and our companion series that we do each year with our annual theme. You can also get exclusive merch, including t-shirts, handbags, a coffee mug, and a long sleeve shirt. We also have available bonus extra questions at the end of most of our podcast episodes. You get access to exclusive Discord channels, discounts on our store, access to any future online D&D campaigns. You get to vote on topics for some of our episodes. You can easily access all of the Patreon content right through Spotify now. So super easy. Go to our Spotify page at the top. It's going to say exclusive content for subscribers. If you're a patron, hit that button. You get all of our bonus content right there on Spotify, right with your regular feed. And of course, you get the satisfaction of knowing you helped a podcast in need. Our overhead includes editing software, marketing equipment, recording software, and a lot more. And there's a lot that goes into keeping the lights on here. And we really appreciate all of our patron subscribers for helping the show happen.
All right. So now before we get to like, what would God's only son look like on Krypton, whether it would be, we got to think about this Bible verse, the most well-known Bible verse in the world, John 3:16, for God so loved the world. But guess what? The Greek word is cosmos, and it's literally means all of created existence. For God so loved all of created existence. Now, those who wrote this Bible verse at a particular time didn't know there was billions of stars and planets revolving around them and the possibility of life on other planets. They only were concerned with their dome and their land and their neighborhood. And so their world was just who was in their algorithm of the days, their neighbors, you know? But now we know now, I think it is great that you have this word that means cosmos, for God so loved the universe, the entire universe. So as we start, as we look at the telescopes, if we look at the James Webb telescope, as we see Hubble images from space, it is a large, huge, universe that we are part of. And so, yeah. I geek out on faith and science, not either or, faith and science. Faith helps us understand deep questions of existential questions of existence and meaning and all those things. But science also shares with us how the world operates, how the universe operates, where we came from and perhaps where we're going. And there's some good philosophical and theological questions all around those too. But when you think about for God so loved the cosmos, I think we can extend beyond Earth. What if there is conscious life out there in the world? And would that make a difference to our theology and how we understand God and how we understand Jesus, the incarnation? Brandon, you're out of seminary. Sure. Answer that question in two sentences. Go. Just kidding. You can reflect more.
I don't know if I could do two sentences, but yeah. I think even if there isn't intelligent life beyond our planet, God's love for the cosmos does indicate that in the final redemption, when everything is glorified, that will include everything beyond our planet as well. So who knows what the rest of the galaxies and the known and the universe will look like and could be different after the final redemption, where everything is put back into that perfect garden state like it all started in. And as for like if there is anything intelligent out there, like I don't know how this would work, and I need more than two sentences, but that would tell me that God would care about them as well by way of redemption. That could turn into a universalist approach of like, okay, I saved humanity and now boom, everything else is good. I think it's one of the books in C.S. Lewis's sci-fi trilogy that deals with Jesus going to a different planet to be their Messiah. I forget. It's not Paralandra. It's one of the other ones. I can't remember which one now. That hideous strength, it might be that one. So I don't, it could be something like that where Jesus, you know, tabernacles in a different way. That's what happened in Narnia. It's, yeah. you know, Aslan is different. He's not Jesus of Nazareth in Narnia. But I think if God so loved the cosmos, think something's going to have to get redeemed. I don't know how, but if there are Kryptonians out there, they will be saved.
Yeah. And sci-fi is just what if, you know, speculative, yeah. Fiction. And then C.S. Lewis did it with his sci-fi, what ifing, you know, what if we encountered a planet that hadn't fallen yet and what that looked like. Mm-hmm. And if humans showed up, would we be the snake, quote unquote, that right. were tempting them, in a different way. I mean, it's great. That's great. What if, storytelling and imaginations. And I think when it comes to conscious life, I mean, I think when it comes to, you know, people ask me, Will, do you believe in aliens? I'm like, well, I don't know if I believe in them, but whether I believe they exist or not, I tend to lean towards yes, the vastness of the universe, whether the same properties of law of science that affect Earth and our rotation around the sun and material makeup also is a part of the larger cosmos. And so with a vast number of stars and planets are out there, most likely there's some kind of organic life out there, whether they evolve or get to a point where consciousness, where they can reflect on meaning and their own death and demise and whether to travel the stars and ask big questions that we do in theology, I don't know. But most likely there's astrobiology somewhere out there, whether it evolves at some point for conscious life. You know, there may be a planet out there where a meteor never hit the planet to put the dinosaurs extinct. So there's a conscious dinosaur who's asking big questions. It's a velociraptor. A velociraptor is out there thinking and
write
asking
that down. Questions. We're making a movie.
Oh, I think it's out there. I stole that from somewhere. I think that's there.
Well, Velocipastor is a movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's our recommendation. Watch Velocipat. No, don't.
Oh, that was fun.
like that's a great what if thinking question of like conscious life in the universe. What would that look like? And then it does affect the questions we ask about who we understand God to be. You know, a lot of our conversations around God and us and the relationship to humans is this kind of idea of redemption, of longing for Messiah, and then the belief that God sent God's only Son to the world as Messiah in Christ to redeem creation in us. And so there are a lot of scientists and agnostics and atheists who would say, well, if we do discover conscious life on our planet, that puts a big damper on this Christian message of Jesus being just for humans. Well, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of good people of faith and good scientists and people of faith who are also scientists who are like, I don't know if that's going to derail all of Christianity. There's ways to think about that in healthy ways, to think about, well, would God become incarnate on other planets? Would we be the ones who would say, hey, let us share you this good news about Jesus as people who travel to different continents or different countries say, let me share with you the good news of Jesus. Is just space another ocean to cross or another sure. continent to cross or something like that? So what would that look like? Would it be really surprising if we make contact with conscious beings from outer space and they're like, oh, we have a story of a God taking on flesh and blood or our nature for our sake to understand who we are and what we go through. Man, wouldn't that blow our minds? You know, similar to every culture has a flood story. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's something about that. What if they're, you know, a great book to read I recommend is called The Eerie Silence by Paul Davies. He was director of the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, SETI. He's not necessarily a person of faith, but he's fascinated by religious questions. And he says in that book, one of the first questions I'm going to ask an alien if we make contact, do you have music? Do you have an art? And do you have religion? That's like the first thing he's going to ask. And he in that book, The Eerie Silence, says maybe conscious life, intelligent life is super rare. He's been listening, regardless of what we're seeing the government's releasing about aliens. He's like, we're not hearing anything. It's very quiet out there. And he's starting to believe that maybe we are super rare and we may be the only ones out there. He's not saying there's not like life or bacteria or other water
plant life
animals on planets, but in terms of like conscious life able to reflect back on itself, maybe super, super rare. So that's something to think about in this whole idea of like, what if aliens, and then what if Krypton and God became incarnate on Krypton. Go, Brandon.
So Will, when you meet those aliens, three questions. You're going to say, you know, tell me about your music. Do you have art? Tell me about what your religions are like. And then are you going to ask for the best surfing spots on their planet? What's your very specific? Because I'm going to ask, teach me your martial art, because that's what I'm going to want to know. Teach me an alien yes. martial art right now.
Yeah, I'm sure they've gone through some evolutionary process of defense and self-defense and, sure. and peaceful ways of how to do that and not do that and sure. ways to take it, how to be a good steward of their bodies and their relationships. I'm sure they're thinking through those questions too. And if there is life out there on other planets, life comes from water. We know water equals life. When we're looking for life on other planets, we're looking for water. Oh, there's water on Jupiter's moons. Maybe there's life there. Well, guess what? Where there's water, there's also a place where water meets land. And where water meets land, there are waves. And there's gravitational pulls and tides, all that scientific makeup is there. So you better believe who in your culture likes to ride waves, because I think it's a universal truth in the universe that people like to surf. God, love great it. Question. I love how you did that. All right. So we've talked about the history of Kal-El and Jesus of Nazareth. We talked about For God So Loved the Cosmos. We've talked about Krypton, faith in science. Krypton is a faith in science or just like a science. Typically advanced society, but let's go a little bit. If before we put God on Krypton in Kryptonian flesh and blood and bones, let's talk. What does it mean to be incarnate? Like this incarnational theology? Yeah, again, in a whole nother episode. There's entire classes. Systematic sure. Theology 101 that talk about incarnational theology. We're not going to solve it all here, but look it up. Find some good authors out there. This good stuff. But like the meaning. To become flesh, carne, that's the word. You know, I'm a carnivore. I like to eat steak. But incarnate, God taking flesh and blood on earth, eternal, the creator of all the universe, separate from all things, the one, the ground of all being, becomes an actual human being. That's what we mean by incarnation and born. And we believe that that happened in Jesus of Nazareth, born in a manger with Mary giving birth and then living a real human life. So that's what we kind of mean by incarnational theology and Jesus taking on our nature and our lot for our sake. Brandon, what am I missing there? There's so much there. The Creed's talking about it. Thick books are about it, but what am I missing there?
Yeah, so this idea comes from, I believe it's John 1:14 is the verse where it says that Jesus, the Greek word there is tabernacle, or the Hebrew word there is tabernacled, which goes back to the Old Testament where before they built the temple, Solomon built the temple, before David brought the Ark of the Covenant back to Jerusalem, before all of that, when they are wandering the wilderness, God told the people of Israel, hey, I want you to build this super tent. That's basically all it was. It was a really big, very beautiful tent. It's not just like, you know, here's some, you know, fabric. Like this thing was beautiful. You can go. It's near the end of the book of Exodus. God gives his instruction of how he wants this thing built. And then the Holy Spirit comes upon the builders so that way they can build it and make it that beautiful and that ornate. That's like how significant this was. And this was where God's presence was to be. It was this tent where God's presence could be and they could brings their sacrifices. So you fast forward, you know, thousands of years later to Jesus, who does this same thing of taking on flesh and blood. You can think of it as like a tent in a way, to God taking on this human form to be like us. It is God's way of meeting his people where they are at. And as Christians, we hopefully carry this same mentality of being in our communities, being among people, taking on the, maybe not the appearance of people of the world, but being in the world and ministering to them and being in our neighborhoods, caring about our community, caring about people. Like this is more of the doctrine of like getting out, discipleship, doing the things that Jesus has called us to do. We have to incarnate our communities in order to bring Jesus to them.
I like that distinction. Yeah, God becomes incarnate in Jesus, and then as his followers, as those who follow in his steps, we then to become incarnate in our communities and have this ministry of presence and being with people. And I think Superman does that too, right? Like,
he gets a job.
It's a job. He gets a job, and he's a reporter, but he's also has friends. He's with people. He can not only fly above them, but he also walks with them. And so that kind of understanding that God became like us so that we can become like God is a deep part of kind of Orthodox and Eastern Orthodox theology of the divine gift swap of God becoming like us so that we then become unified with God. And I think that's an important.
And I think that also helps because, you know, when you start talking theology and doctrine, some people can immediately tune it out as like, well, that's just big talking points, big head stuff. I care about a Christianity that's active and doing something. And it's like, well, actually, like, doctrine is the implementation of theology. So it does matter what we think, because that dictates how we live as well. Also, Jesus had a normal job too. That's another connection.
That's right.
Clark Kent worked as a reporter for the Daily Planet, and Jesus was a carpenter. So we got another little connection there.
And isn't that something that the creator of the universe, who shaped and molded and sanded and shaped with hand and breathed life into it, also became human, like to make things.
Like to work with his hands.
Was handsy. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and in a quick story, like my internship supervisor, when I was on an internship, she shared the story of that one night, and she pre-shot a Christmas, and I've used it as a Christmas illustration before as well, that one night her daughter was scared of the dark or something was happening, needed to be comforted, and Rachel, you know, got in bed with her and said, "Don't worry, honey, you're not alone. And even when I'm not here, God is always with you." Mm-hmm. And then her daughter said, "Well, I would like to have God with skin on, please." And she was like, that's going to preach at Christmas. Yeah. And so it's not just these aloof ideas that God is with you, God is creator, mm-hmm. God is creator, but like Jesus is a tangible physical thing. We know by the universe, we know what God likes matter. God likes matter, and your matter matters, and God became matter for us. Like, all those things are wrapped up in kind of incarnational theology, that we're not just like one day going to float with our disembodied soul to play harp on a cloud. We're material beings. That's why here we are coming up on Easter, and Jesus was raised from the dead. Not just his soul floated up to be in the cloud somewhere, but like he literally ate breakfast with the disciples. He phased through walls, but Thomas put his fingers in his scars of his hands and side that his matter mattered and still remained matter. I happen to believe in a physical resurrection, literal resurrection. And so that is that's a big part of God's story from the beginning, God's story within the Exodus, and God's story in Jesus, and then resurrection, post-resurrection. All right, man, we talked about incarnation there. Anything we're missing there? Because we're gonna now flip over to what would the incarnation then look like on Krypton? And I think it matters. Like, would this, it doesn't have to be named Jesus. It doesn't have to be Jesus of Nazareth. It has to be, right. I think it has to be, what if God has to go and be a Kryptonian, mm-hmm. with maybe L at the end of his name? Maybe that's too on the nose for Hebrew. I don't know. Maybe.
Right.
What would this incarnate God be named? What town would this person be? Would it be a male? Would it be a female? Would it be, would it be at the high scientific age of before the death of the whole planet? Or would it be like 2000 years before Kal-El is born? Like, where? Mm-hmm. I'm all these questions are in my mind. What is the place? What is the time? Where is God born and put flesh on, Kryptonian flesh on, for the sake of Krypton?
Well, one thing I think one easy step that we can start with is the fact that so Superman lands on Earth and like nobody notices a difference in his appearance, right? Mm. Right. The Kryptonians apparently look a lot like humans.
They're humanoid.
looks a lot like American humans. They're humanoid. So all of these white Jesus pictures are going to be somewhat more accurate because apparently that's kind of how they look like on Krypton as well. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, you know, the soft blue eyes, and I'm assuming no robe with the blue or red sash. That maybe not that.
I would
say, just trying to do like parallels here between like the story of Jesus, how it's shown in Narnia, and then with Krypton, I'm going to assume Jesus of Krypton is coming during the pre-scientific age.
Okay. I like
that. I'm going to put that one out there.
Yep.
Not because science isn't important. You know, just listen to what we just talked about like 20 minutes ago. But I think there's a purpose behind the fact that God sent his son prior to technological advancement to advancement like we have now. They had advanced technology for their day, obviously, didn't even have a printing press. So I do think that there is and it's similar in Narnia, where you have this like fantasy world, this medieval kind of society. So I think there's a purpose behind that. So I'm going to go pre-scientific, look kind of white. What would you add in?
I like that too. Like I think there's a reason, a providential reason that God chose to be born at the particular time and context and place. Now there is that prophecy. It comes out of the Hebrews, out of the Jews, as a blessing for all nations. There's a reason this particular religion, house or the context of where God was born into, like that kind of belief in terms of God becoming flesh. And then underneath, kind of a Roman Empire rule oppression, the death that Jesus died, is important. We won't get into like all the atonement theories, but the fact that like the solidarity with the human condition of death, and then here I am going to preach my Easter sermon, like that Easter is God's confirmation that death will not have the final word, that love wins, God wins, right? And so there's that kind of confirmation, rather than like, oh, Jesus had a blood debt to do and God really likes blood and Jesus had to die so that we could, I like this idea that God showed solidarity with the human condition and won't let death have the final word. So that's my funeral sermons. There's my Easter sermons that happens. So I think with a planet, and our planet could explode at some point, the scientists or die. Scientists are trying to say,
thought.
I know those exodus. Hey, happy Easter, everybody. Maybe our planet's going to die. But yeah, are we going to send a one single human being to another planet at some point?
And a dog
and their cousin who's a little bit older, you know. Yeah, is there a phantom zone where there's a prisoner who will get loose and try to take over that planet? Yeah. but I like the idea of him being pre-scientific age, that this legend or religious text being passed down on to place their faith in, that like, and then maybe a second coming or redemption of all things is a part of that theology, mythology, philosophy of Krypton.
Okay, I think you're going to like this one, but I need you to science check me for a second. Fact check me. A red sun is a dying star, correct?
A red dwarf sun is a dying sun. But when I was reading up on Krypton, they were saying it was a giant red one. It's larger than our sun. You know, everything that Krypton is like bigger, more scientifically advanced, bigger sun than ours is like bigger and better than Earth, other than we still exist.
It's the Texas of space. That mean in Krypton's final redemption, it's a yellow sun?
Ah, okay. Yeah.
And then everyone on Krypton would be restored to their, I guess, superpowered life, I guess.
Yeah, because they didn't have powers there. They were science, right. But it's the thing. But there's this kind of redemption of their planet not dying, but also their sun that gives a new kind of life. We're playing around with S-O-N-S-U-N, Red Sun, Yellow Sun. Now we got like Sith and like yellow lightsabers. We're going to go down that. I had to put in a Star Wars reference at some
of
point.
Of course.
Yeah.
Shocking you've made it this long.
I know. We're almost done. Krypton died of a Sith sun. That is exactly what happened. But yeah, I think that goes into play. Like this, definitely their cosmology would have to, and their understanding of cosmology and their sun and their material world is, I think matters with, mm-hmm. with who this savior messiah is going to be when God becomes incarnate on Krypton. I like the idea of pre-scientific and then perhaps coming back, or does the cultures there kill the incarnate God or Kryptonian messiah? Do they try to snuff him out because he was threatening their ways? And then does he rise again? Or she? It could be a girl. What if it's a female? What if this Kryptonian incarnate is female? We could do that. Jesus was male, on this particular planet, it could be a female. So
is the science people who are kind of like the leaders of Krypton, are they the Pharisees? What if they were the Pharisees? And that is because that's a big part of Jesus' story as well, is he spoke out against the religious elite. So who are the religious elite on Krypton? You know, the Rao, whatever it was.
So I need somebody to talk about me with that. Please pronounce this another the right
good,
way.
That's another good one too, because that's a sun god, right? S-U-N.
Yeah.
So like they added another letter from the Egyptian god Ra. Like that's the only difference there.
That's right. Yeah, and do they believe that this is Ra incarnate rather than Yahweh? Mm. You know, that's another thing. Is this Ra incarnate and is connected with the sun, S-U-N-S-O-N, and that kind of thing? Yeah, I think someone who claims to be Messiah incarnate and then God is incarnate, then they're going to butt up against the systems and the religious systems that aren't doing things the way God intends them to be, whether they're oppressing or whether they are don't have things right. Or Jesus was a Pharisee. Jesus was a rabbi. So that's why he fought with them a lot, because he took it personal, because as his family, you can fight with your family harder than you can fight with anybody else, you know, because you're closer to them. And so Jesus had some family fights. And so, I think their story is going to be, it doesn't have to mirror exactly Jesus, but they're going to teach in ways that they understand Kryptonian life and culture to be. There might be a parable of, instead of the sower, it might be the parable of the red sun or something, something like that, that has to do with that, what people understand. And then eventually, redemption, whether redemption happens after the planet explodes and there's a new creation, or before, maybe there's a way that there's this, if God becomes incarnate on Krypton and their message helps save the planet, maybe there's some incarnate believing people on Krypton that help Jor-El save the planet. Like maybe there's some Christians out there today who can help save our planet and believe in climate change and want to help the planet. Maybe we can help our scientists and work together. And that's what I would want to believe, that Krypton goes down that road, that they never, the planet doesn't explode because some good believing incarnate Messiah named Jessel. That could be female too. Jessica L.
That'll work.
But yeah, that's good stuff. That's good. What else are we forgetting there that we could tie into this kind of incarnational theology with Krypton, or what that would look like? What if,
you know, maybe just stepping back from Krypton to a second, back to our own universe. I think you have a lot of good faith in the fact that if we run into another, I think you said dinosaur alien species, and they have a similar messiah narrative as we do, I think you have a lot of good faith that the Christian church is going to respond by going, oh, cool, so you're our brothers and sisters in Christ then. There's a whole lot of fundamentalists out there who's like, no, you don't believe in Jesus, so it doesn't count. So I do want to point that one out. But yeah, when it, coming back to Krypton now, there's so many other ways that we could look at, like, you know, you look at the parable of the Good Samaritan, you know, you look at these like high points of the ministry of Jesus, like would there be a Samaritan culture on Krypton or any other planet for that matter that like teaching, you know, one of the biggest teachings of Jesus is love God and love your neighbor. So what does that look like on other planets of like love me and love these people who are difficult to love? Like, yeah, you just think of these different like high points throughout the ministry of Jesus, the 12 disciples. What would, you know, Rao incarnate on Krypton's followers be like, you know, like it's interesting.
Yeah, I love that. And then, yeah, you talk about the high points and how Jesus postured himself, or, and we say that's God's nature too. So I think that's universal. It doesn't have to be, you know, a Jewish rabbi in first century Palestine on that hops over to Krypton, but incarnate with Krypton, but that nature of who God is, that's that we see revealed in Jesus will also be seen in this Messiah on Krypton. So how they posture themselves of welcoming the weak, healing those who are sick, those longing for redemption and liberation. And then this particular person will bend down and wash people's feet, or whatever a symbol of humility is in that culture and time, and dying for Kryptonians to say, death doesn't have the final word. The planet exploding isn't the final word. Oh, and then raising to new life, and then pointing to a new creation that will emerge. And so I think those elements are there, that would be there too. And so as we think about Holy Week and the great 3 days of Monday, Thursday, Good Friday, and Easter, I think that would be tied into this particular Messiah's on Krypton's life and posture too, because that's that universal idea of who God is, along with universal idea of math and gravity and light and speed of light. Those equations don't change on Mars as they would here. And same way with God, God doesn't change on another planet. I think that's interesting to think about.
One more science, and then we should probably start, you might want to wrap this up. Good news for you, Lutheran. You brought up the water statement earlier. Mm-hmm. So baptism's probably on the table. Some form of baptism may be on the table here. Also communion, probably there. I would assume there's got to be some communion element here too, but that goes into Passover tradition and all of that. So that might look different, but if there's life, there's water. So there's probably some kind of baptism thing going on here too. You never know.
Oh, Brandon, you know me. So we talk about incarnational theology. I won't get it super deep, but sacramental theology. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this particular religion, this particular Messiah will, if matter matters, and sacramental theology just means like the tangible physical world becoming infused with the divine as a means of grace, then this particular planet will also have a tangible physical means of being infused with the divine as a means of grace for its people to sustain them in their journey of faith and trying to understand their universe and science and life and death and relationships and love and heartbreak and brokenness, that the sacraments are there to sustain us in our journey. So 100%. Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. No, there's definitely on Krypton, if God becomes incarnate on Krypton, there's going to be some kind of sacramental theology.
Oh, sure.
It's going to be that. And you know, what did Kal-El bring with him from his there? Like he had all those little crystals, and he has the solitude,
Fortress of Solitude.
Fortress of Solitude, and he has like capes and symbols and language, and he's holding on to those things because that's a part of his culture. That is a means of grace for him. It's kind of sacramental images of him holding on to something as a means of knowledge and holding on to his past and his family tree. Sacramental theology is a big part of this story too. Golly, that's so good. All right. Well, friends, whether you're watching us on YouTube or whether you're listening in your earbuds, what do you think? What did we forget? Is there something that sparked an idea like, oh, you didn't talk about this? Why didn't you bring up this? You're allowed to let us know. We're on all the social medias. There's a comment section down there somewhere and a thumbs up button, and you can thumbs up and then type in your question. If you thought about this idea, you can friend and follow us on our social media and on this. And yeah, this was, man, super fun episode. I've been thinking about it leading up to this, and I'm going to think about it when I'm in church services over the next 3 days, the rest of Holy Week. I'm going to be thinking about, you know, incarnational theology, sacramental theology, and then a God who will not let death have the final word over our lives.
Rahu is in the sun. Holy is your. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that's right. For God so loved the cosmos, even Kryptonians,
even Krypton.
Even Krypton. Good. Hey, Brandon, thanks for joining us for this. You can follow Brandon on all the socials too. Hit up My Seminary Life. Great, great episode. And I'm not just saying it's a great podcast because I've been on it a few times. It is good.
Thank you.
I just listened to like the history of like his name that I had a relation to because Brandon Lee like died in my hometown.
Crazy.
And yeah, crazy. When I was in college. That's a man, what a connection. But we do hope. We hope you have a holy, holy week. We hope that you hear anew the good news of God's life and death and resurrection for you in the person of Jesus. And then wherever you are in your journey or wilderness of life and faith, know that you are loved. You don't have to understand it all. You don't have to have everything in perfect order because Jesus didn't ask for your permission to die for you, or you didn't have to have all the right answers for him to die for you. He did it anyway before you even knew all that or understood all that. So, man, I'm going to get off my Easter sermon right now and just say thanks, everyone. Remember always to share the faith and share the geek.
Hi, my name is TJ Blackwell, also known as Tejas Tiberius Juan, Tejas Jackson, Kung Fu Dugong recently. I go by many, many names. And I came here today to ask you to please check out our YouTube channel. There are a bunch of exclusive series there, like Comic Book Ketchup, Manga Mustard, Drinks with Tejas, which is my personal favorite, the one where I get to talk to other people about their favorite drinks or just drinks in general. We have a companion series to our annual theme on YouTube. We do Friday Night Frights and Wednesday Night Weeaboo. Those are both ran by Christian Ashley. He's great. Check him out. There are exclusive shorts, which are pretty new. Christian reviews, he's going to review every Spider-Man comic one at a time, which is insane. Non-canon, which is where Joshua will be reviewing one IP from outside of canon in his favorite fandoms, or a piece of literature that is part of the biblical extra-canonical material, which is a super interesting short series. Will's Wednesday pull list, where he talks about his comic book pull list each week. He picks a top comic for his weeklies. And there are other surprise bonus content. It goes straight to YouTube. And many of our regular podcast episodes get posted there as well. Because, you know, we like to see each other when we talk. And we don't want to rob you of that ability. So check us out. Like, subscribe. We would appreciate it so much. And it helps us a ton. Thank you.
Hey guys, Christian here to talk to you about the Ant Network. That is the Anazon Ministries Podcasting Network. That's what we do for all of us here together. You can follow the whole network in a single feed on Spotify at Anazon Ministries Podcast or on the network page on Apple Podcasts to just see what we're all doing and what are we doing. Well, we have plenty of things here. We've got the homily. You love Pastor Will? You want to hear Pastor Will preach? You hear the man doing a homily there? It's amazing. The man does spectacular work for Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Then we have the Whole Church Podcast. If you want to hear Joshua and TJ talk to different people from around the church who have very different views on how things should go, check it out there. You want to go to My Seminary Life. You want to get some more Brandon Knight in your life. Who doesn't want more of that? Go there, hear about the man, discuss his time at seminary, which is what he used to do. Now he's on other topics, and just head out there for what the rest of the man can do. You hear a lot of good stuff that way. Now you can head over to Let Nothing Move You. That's my podcast where I go through the Bible chapter by chapter, verse by verse. I started with Luke, then I went to Romans. Now I'm in Genesis, and I'm moving on from there. It's a good time if you want to hear how I view the Bible, how things should go there. You can do that. You can go to Dummy for Theology, where you can hear Joshua Noel discuss the various theological topics that he has there in the attempt to show every side of the big discussions leaving you with more questions than answers. If that infuriates you like me, but you still want to listen, head out that way. You can go to the Bible After Hours. We have the foul-mouthed preacher there, and he's going to deliver things that are not ready for every ear to hear, but sometimes you need someone to be a little filthy out there just to give a more progressive view of the church to challenge the status quo of what is happening here. Do you agree with him? Do you not like him? How are you going to know if you don't listen to him? And finally, we have Save Best for Last, the Clydes. Taylor and Elizabeth Clyde, you need some more pangalangan in your life, like all of us do, then head out there, see what's going on in their own life, in their own ministry, so you can hear the devotions and everything going on in their lives. Once again, that's the Anna's Out Ministries Podcasting Network, AMP, and we love you guys. See you next time.